Let's see if that's true. We're going to see why Simeon is chosen by Joseph to stay behind. It's Genesis 39 is where we're looking. Or, forgive me, 37. I just told you 37. And then I changed it on you. Sorry about that. So in Genesis 37 then, you see in verse number 12, his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And verse 14, Jacob is telling Joseph to go. In verse 15, someone found Joseph walking in circles in the desert and said, "What are you doing out here?" And he says, "Well, this cheese is getting moldy. I'm supposed to give it to my brothers. And okay, they're not over here." And he walks about another 20 miles to Dothan. Verse 17. In verse 18, when they saw him coming afar off, even before he came near to them, they conspired against him to slay him. And, you know, a good question there might be, how did they see him coming so far away? But, you know, that's probably a good conversation for a different time. Now, we don't know exactly who the big idea was from verse 20, at least. "Come now, therefore, let us slay him." So they, as a group, at least, we don't know who gets the credit for the big idea. But we know who's against it. Look at verse 21. Reuben says, Reuben heard it, he delivered them out of their hands and said, "Let's not kill him." Reuben said to them, "Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that's in the wilderness." All right, so we have Reuben. And then you might notice that Reuben, verse 29, has gone somewhere and done something because he returns and Joseph is gone. So maybe you're right, Greg. Maybe you're right. But best I can tell from Psalm 105, Psalm 106, Acts 7, Joshua 24, all the rehearsals of this history later in the Bible, I haven't seen Simeon as being one of the people that I haven't seen Simeon as a role player. But that is a good guess. If we don't have a good answer, that's a good guess. Corbin?
Well, later in the same passage, he mentions Judah as the person who initially brings up the idea, at the very least.
Are you talking about in chapter 37 or chapter 42?
37.
Could you cite the verse, please? Okay. Judah said to his brother, "What profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood?" So Judah, yeah, thank you. Judah's the guy who says, "Let's just keep him alive and make some dollars off him, at least get him out of our hair."
Now, Judah, at this time, is the third son, isn't it?
He's the fourth son?
Fourth son.
Right.
So it's Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah.
Right.
And at the point that we're reading this in chapter 37, Reuben is gone somewhere because he comes back. It says he comes.
Right.
So Simeon is the oldest in the group at that point. And so if there's any responsibility for leadership, it should be the oldest.
Yeah, that's a great point, Brother Dick. Maybe it's because in Reuben's absence, Simeon took the... That's a great point. I hadn't thought about the fact that he's the second oldest, Levi being the third and Judah the fourth.
And Reuben is not there. So.
Right. Now, how do we get this, in case you might be new with us in the recent weeks, the reason we know the order of the birth is because it tells us in chapter 29, I believe.
And maybe he was just a walkway. Okay. I mean, not everybody that is the oldest or the second oldest is the one that's the leader. And maybe Simeon shirked from following or being the leader in this situation. He was waffling, and that was that. It was Judah that stepped forward and did. And maybe Joseph's thinking back and saying, "Simeon, you were in charge. You should have been the one that kept them from doing something."
Yeah, that's right. Now, the reasons we might be uncomfortable saying that is because we, honestly, if you've been in church a while and you've heard the stories of Joseph, we have a hard time saying he sinned.
Right.
And this almost feels vindictive here. I mean, you know, so Simeon was the one who called the shots. Simeon can spend a few more days in Egypt.
Right. He looks like he's the oldest one.
What?
It looks like he could be the eldest in the group.
To Joseph, it looks like he was the eldest in the group.
I mean, he was technically at that point.
Right. Yeah. And now that's a great point too, is that, look, let me keep your sheep here while you go and get... So these are good points. And if we had a reason to pick one over the other, I'd love that.
Yeah.
But these are great ideas. Two great ideas. Maybe Joseph knows. He was the one who made the final call. Even though Judah's the one given credit for the big idea, Simeon might have been the one that gave the nod of approval in Dad's absence and in Reuben's absence. Reuben was out there smoking marshmallows maybe by the fire. I don't know what he was doing. And then possibly it could be simply because Joseph wanted to keep the decision maker with him in Egypt, and then who would that have left in charge at that point? Well, Reuben again, right? Reuben would have been still there, and he would have taken the crew back to Canaan. Suzanne? Suzanne, huh?
Yeah, I was just wondering,
We have a Suzanne over here and a Susanna over here. Okay, that's how. Go ahead.
We talked about the story of Dinah.
Right.
And how Susan and Eli, who all kind of fit into his character, yeah. That he's a bit violent, so he could have been an idea later.
Yes, that is another good point, is that not only was he in charge and selling him into slavery, but it might have been his idea to kill him. Now, the reason that I'm interested in that answer is I want to show you a couple different places here. We'll come back to Genesis 42. I hope you'll keep your spot. But please look at Numbers 26. Numbers 26. It's three books ahead. Leviticus, Numbers. Yep, 26. And this is sometime in the future. This is, if I were just guessing here, I know that Jacob spent 17 years and then Joseph, so probably just under 300 years are passing between what we've just read and what is about to take place in Numbers 26, okay? Numbers 26, we know we're far into the wandering, okay? We are 38 years into the wandering, the 40 years of wandering. And look what it says in verse 1. It came to pass after the plague that the Lord spoke unto Moses and Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saying, take the sum of all the congregation of the children of Israel from 20 years old and upward through their father's house, all that are able to go to war in Israel. So let's count all the sword swingers that we have here at our disposal, and let's go by tribe. So verse 3, Moses and Eleazar the priest spoke with them in the plains of Moab by Jordan near Jericho, saying, take the sum of the people from 20 years old and up, as the Lord commanded Moses, and the children of Israel went forth out of the land of Egypt. All right. Now, Reuben, he's the oldest. It says so. Verse 5. Reuben, the oldest son of Israel, the children of Reuben. And I'm going to spare you. Look at verse 7. These are the families of Reubenites, that they were numbered of them 43,730. All right. Now, that's, if we don't have a reference, if we don't really know if that's a lot or a little. So let's look at the next one. Look at the sons of Simeon, verse 12. After their families. Notice verse 14, these are the families of Simeonites, 22,200. So about half of the strength of Reuben. You say, oh, that doesn't prove nothing. I'll grant you that doesn't prove anything. But look at the next son, verse 15, the children of Gad, after their families. Look at verse 18. These are the families of the children of Gad, according to those that were numbered of them, 40,500. Well, looky there. Tribe 1 that's mentioned in the 40s, tribe 2, which is Simeon, in the 20s, tribe 3, which is Gad, is back in the 40s. So clearly there is a distinction in the size. A person could say that that is a reward or a curse, a blessing or a cursing from the Lord. Now, really, the next frame of reference is not all that fair. Verse 19, the sons of Judah, and you might notice verse 22, these are the families of Judah according to those that were numbered of them. 3 score and 16, so over 76,000 for Judah. So you have in the 40s, in the 20s, in the 40s, in the 70s. So already you can see that God is making one of the tribes more prosperous than the others. Let's see if I can just demonstrate this here. You have Judah, and by the way, later on, they almost by themselves have as many fighting men as the northern 10 or 11 tribes by them altogether. By the time you get into the time of the kings, it is striking how huge Judah is compared to the other tribes put together. So you have Judah here, and you have this sort of this average, and then you have Simeon. Okay? So that is how it's developing as we get later into the Old Testament. That's not near as, in my opinion, as shocking as Deuteronomy 33. Go there with me, please. Deuteronomy 33. I saw this in my Bible. I saw this in my Bible reading about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I thought, I think we missed someone here. Of course, you know, I'm speaking as just a reader trying to come to the text, and that was that day in Deuteronomy, and I noticed something. All right? So, Moses is about to cash in his chips, right? He's about, in chapter 30, okay, he's about to die. Let me see if I can say it there. Verse 1. This is the blessing wherewith Moses, the man of God, blessed the children of Israel before his death. So, this is Deuteronomy 33. And he, Moses, said, the Lord came from Sinai and rose up from Seir unto them and shined forth from Mount Paran, and he came with 10,000s of saints from his right hand and went a fiery law for them. All right, so he starts verse 4. Moses commanded us a law, even the inheritance of the congregation of Jacob. He was a king in Jeshurun with the heads of the people and the tribes of Israel gathered together. And now we have blessings pronounced on people. All right, here we go. Notice verse 6. Let Reuben live and not die. Let not his men be few. This is the blessing of Judah. And he said, hear, Lord, the voice of Judah. Bring him into his people. Verse 8. Then of Levi, he said, let the Thummim and thy Urim be the Holy One. And so we have sons 1, 3, and 4 mentioned. But there's no Simeon. Then verse 12, we skip around, we get son number 12. And verse 13, son number 11. And by the way, by the end of the chapter, Simeon is not mentioned at all. And he's the only son of the 12 not mentioned as having a blessing. And he's not even worth a curse. So I don't know exactly what's taking place, but it seems like whatever attitude God is reflecting through the writer of Moses on Simeon, it is what Joseph had in his opinion in chapter 42 of Genesis. They diminish in Numbers 26, and they're nothing in Deuteronomy 33. That is not, I'm not saying, I don't think I know enough to boldly say that they're non-existent by the time Jesus comes, but I think it's safe to say that they are becoming pretty insignificant by the time of Christ.
Well, you have Revelation 7. He is insignificant in the tribes of Israel.
Certainly.
But certainly not in his birth position, which none of them are.
Right.
But
I'm glad you pointed that out.
He pushed down the list to effect number 6.
Right. Yeah, and you know, if Deuteronomy and Numbers are not indicative enough, we've realized that there's something more than the birth order taking place. But Walt brings a good point, and that is in the last book of the Bible, in the end times, we expect, at least most of us do, expect to see the literal tribes of Israel reoccur, and Simeon is on the list. And there's as many of him in that chapter as there are the other tribes. So, one, you know, there's something to discuss there in any case. Not with Walt. Go ahead, Brother Everett.
Just to kind of clarify, back in 37, when he was sold.
Chapter 37 of Genesis? All right, let's go there together.
He doesn't really know, I don't know that he knows Reuben's culpability and all that. You know, doesn't really say who the bad brother was or which one. But back when you go to 42, I think he overhears Reuben saying, you know, did I not tell you
where he's been? So you're talking about, chapter 42, verse 22. I want everyone to see it because you're saying some good stuff there, Everett. So 42:22 is what he's talking about. And Joseph is listening, says in verse 23.
So he listens and hears that Reuben may not have taken part in the initial, he may have had some culpability, but he wasn't, the main one. And then, Simeon's being close to age.
In the very next verse.
Being close in age. They probably quarreled a little bit,
Fantastic point, Everett.
So he probably knew that Simeon would have been the one. If he blamed him as being the one who held the most responsibility, he also, like Susanna was saying about the out, perhaps, he knew he probably quarreled a lot with Reuben, and perhaps he was, the one.
Yeah, I really appreciate pointing that out. I think it's significant that Reuben tries to clear his name somewhat in the very next verse. Joseph makes Simeon stick behind. I think that is a great, great summary. Yeah, I'm just confirming from Genesis 29, Simeon was the second born. So, very good. Well, I don't know if you're sold on that answer, but I am. So, good. And now you can write books and claim them as your own. All right. So let's look now at verse number 20. We've looked at verse 24. Listen to verse 25. Joseph commanded to fill their sacks with corn and restore every man's money into his sack and to give them provision for the way, and thus he did unto them. And they laded their asses with the corn and departed thence. And as one of them opened his sack to give his ass provender or for the inn, he espied his money, for behold, it was in the sack's mouth. And he said unto his brother, my money's restored, and lo, it is even in my sack. And their hearts failed them. And their hearts failed them, and they were afraid, saying one to another, what is this that God has done to us? Now, I just wanted to point something out here real quick. It is about a 190-mile journey they had to take before they realized, oh my goodness! One of them gets off at the way stop to water the beast, and good heavens, my money is in my bag. And right now, it looks like there's just one brother that fits that description. And the verse number 29, and they, oh, by the way, notice who they gave credit for this kathapel. The end of verse 28. What is it that God has done to us? I don't want to give them too much credit as being respecters of God. They've given me precious little indication that they fear Jehovah. But maybe they have enough sense here to realize that God is behind everything. Verse 29. They came unto Jacob their father into the land of Canaan and told them all that befell unto them, saying, "The man who is the Lord of the land spake roughly to us and took us for the spies of the country. And we said unto him, we are true men, we are no spies. We be 12 brothers, son of our father. One is not, the youngest is this day with our father in the land of Canaan. So one is dead and one is back home with dad." Verse 33. So we told him this. "And the man, the lord of the country, said to us, hereby shall I know that you're true men. Leave one of your brethren here with me, and take food for the famine of your household, and be gone. And bring your youngest brother to me. Then shall I know that you are no spies, but that you are true men. So will I deliver you your brethren, and ye shall traffic in the land. You'll be able to have business dealings in the land. You can have food in the land." So, verse 35, "came to pass as they emptied their sacks that, behold," it wasn't just one dude that had his money back. Every man's bundle of money was in his sack. "And when both they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid." Now, why would they be afraid?
It looks like they stole it.
Yeah, it looks like they stole it. Okay.
Backing up just a touch.
Okay.
To the, where you were talking about what they said, what is this that God has done to us?
Mm-hmm.
Whether they were honestly fearers of God or not, you know how many times people give bad omens or bad events to God,
yeah,
and yet when things are going good, look what I did.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, that's today.
A great life lesson. It's interesting that they're seeing the actions of Joseph. Maybe they see themselves as being tricked. I don't know what they're thinking right now. They're afraid, I know that. Because as far as they know, they gave the money to the steward and now they have the money. And but it's interesting to note that they don't think that God was behind their selling Joseph into Egypt.
Right.
But we find out that God was behind. So the author, who's up here, Moses, is looking down on the whole story by the Holy Spirit. And he says that Joseph knew that God sent him into slavery. And here the brothers are saying, by the way, just so you remember that, look at 45:5. After Joseph reveals himself to his brothers, look what he says to them. This is later on. This is 2-3 weeks down the road. Look at verse 5. "Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that you sold me here, for God sent me here before you to preserve life." I was sent here to keep you alive. So Joseph was willing to do, was willing to say, "Hey, you brothers did this to me, but God was doing it." So there's a lot of respecters of God's control behind the scenes. And his brothers are some of them, but only, as Brother Dick pointed out, when they were in trouble. So verse 36, "Jacob, their father, said to them, me have you bereaved of my children. Joseph is not, and now basically, Simeon is as good as dead." Why is Simeon basically as good as dead?
Because it looks like they stole
him. Yeah.
And he's not sending Benjamin back.
No. I guess Simeon is going to rot in an Egyptian cell. Because,
right,
two reasons. Number one, if he has to see Benjamin, my remaining son from my favorite wife, well, he's not going.
Yeah.
And if we did go back, he would accuse us of theft anyways. And then I would basically lose everyone. You know, it's not happening. All right, so Joseph is not, Simeon is not. Notice how he uses the same terminology for both of them. Simeon's as good as dead. "And he will take Benjamin away. All these things are against me." And here's what Reuben said. This is interesting to me. "Reuben spake unto his father, saying, slay my two sons if I bring him not to thee." Right. Yeah, Jacob's going to kill two of his grandkids. But what does it tell us about Simeon's father and brothers? I mean, what's the hint?
They are willing to let him run in the jail.
Well, we know Reuben has children. It's probably safe to assume that Simeon, who's just probably a year, maybe 2 years younger than him, also has children. You know, it's hard for us to think through this, but this is not a church youth group missions trip down to Egypt where everyone piles out of the van and, you know, taking pictures, smoking and joking with sunglasses on next to the van. You know, we're not doing that. These are 30-year-old men, and they have wives and children. At least Reuben did. So it seems indicative that Simeon is being arrested and his family is frantic back home. Wife, children, that kind of thing. Brother Dick?
And it's a desperate situation. We're talking life and death and the events that are going on here. Not only because of of the issues between the power of Egypt, but also a famine. So, you know, if they resist too much going back to get Simeon, they're also facing an issue later on with the famine is going to destroy things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And it's really a lose-lose. It's a lose-lose situation.
He said if they didn't return too, he would come kill all of them, right?
That's right. And he said that in verse number 20. Bring your youngest brother to me, so shall your words be verified, and you'll not die. So I will find you and kill you if I feel like you're lying to me.
Yeah.
And you better know that the Lord of the country had the resources to make a 200-mile trip and make it happen. I'll hang you on posts around the city.
Egypt was the world-dominating power at that time.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. All right, so verse 38, he said, my son shall not go down with you. For his brother is dead and he's left alone. If mischief befall him by the way in which ye go, then shall you bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. What a sad situation. And he's probably at this time about 125 years old. Since we know from chapter 45, 47, that he's 147 when he dies, and he spent 17 years in Egypt, and we need some time for some things to develop there.
And if you think back, think of the deception that has gone into all of this that started with the way he deceived his father and his brother.
Yes. Yeah.
Years ago.
Yeah, really. I mean, the title of this could be Who's the Dummy Now? You know? I mean, he really sowed in the wind, as Hosea would say, and reaped in the whirlwind.
Yeah.
We really often think that there's some connection. Maybe I can control this thing and keep my harvest from blossoming because I didn't like the seeds I planted. Maybe I can take measures. And what we should be able to see from this is God's superintendence to make sure that we reap what we sow. Jacob is going to pay, is paying dearly for the shenanigans he played on his dad. Right?
Right. And yet, if we jump forward in the story, Joseph is very blessed at the end of his life.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, Jacob is blessed when he sees what comes out of his family. It's really out of Jacob's family that the nations grow. That the nation of Israel grows.
Right. Yes. Well, out of Jacob's family.
Out of Jacob.
But it is the nation of Israel.
Right. But okay. I'm saying it's not. We think of Abraham and Isaac, but there were two sons born to Isaac. Jacob and Esau.
Sure.
And so it's through that lineage, Jacob really sets the blessing of Israel. He is Israel, but it is through his family, through some of the worst issues and some of the most glorious issues that family faces. And he is the father of one of the greatest nations of God's lovely people.
Yeah.
Even in his sorrow, even in his tough times, even in the weeping of
It probably didn't look like it from his viewpoint at this point, but you're right. Let's look at chapter 43, verse 1. The famine was sore in the land. So they're still in Canaan. And it's one of those things you're like, maybe if we put this off another week, we won't have to make a decision. I don't know if you're like that. I am. Let's sleep on it one more time. All right. And the famine was still there. All right. Verse 2. It came to pass when they had eaten up the corn which they had brought out of Egypt, their father said to them, go again, buy us a little food. And Judah said, no, it's madness. Spoken to him, saying, the man did solemnly protest unto us, saying, you will not see my face except your brother be with you. You'll send our brother with us. We will go down and buy thee food. But if you will not send him, we're not going. For the man said unto us, you shall not see my face except your brother be with you. And Israel, that's Jacob. Remember, his name was changed in chapter 32, I believe. Wherefore have you dealt so ill with me? Tell me again, how did this happen? As to tell the man whether you had yet a brother. Can you please tell me how this happened again? They already did that. Because it tells them, it says earlier in the previous chapter, verse 29, they told their father all that befell them. So they've already told the story. And Jacob, also known as Israel, is making a fundamental problem that most people do today. If I just had better understanding, I'm sure the problem will go away. If I just understood and knew how, if I understood why, if I understood everything behind it, I'm sure it would feel better. No, it won't feel better just because you know why or how something happened. Not always. I hope you see that. But I don't know why my husband did that. If I just knew, it won't make it any better.
It just still gets me the level of authority that's bringing Joseph, a foreigner, into the land.
Okay, hold that thought. There's a reason. I can't wait. It's going to be good. Okay. All right. Look at verse 7. And they said, the man asked us straightly of our state and of our kindred, saying, is your father yet alive? Have you another brother? And we told him according to the tenor of these words. Should we certainly know that he would say, well, go get your brother. I mean, and Judah said to Israel, we're small talking, Dad. You know. And Judah said to Israel's father, send the lad with me. Now, okay, how old is Benjamin at least? Well, he's at least 20 because he's been gone 20. He was born before Joseph was sold into slavery. So Jacob is old enough to where a 20-some-year-old is a lad. All right. Now, hold that thought. You got it? All right. Hold your place here. Look back at chapter 22. This is super. This is the Bible interpreting the Bible. I love this. Really do. All right. So we are backing up pre-Jacob. Isaac was how old when Jacob was born? All right, we got to do this, folks. All right. How old was Isaac when Jacob was born? He was not 40. Isaac was 60. So we have 60 years old. So Isaac is 60. 60 years have passed. All right, so we don't know how old Isaac is exactly in this passage, but we do know that Isaac is 60, and we've mentioned in the previous lesson that he's about 100, oh my goodness, and 70 when he died. Okay? So we know that about 110 years previous, plus the amount of years between this time, and remember he was married when he was 40, Isaac was, so 20 years at least. So we have plus 20, because that brings us to 40. Alright? So, Isaac is married when he's 40. Jacob is born when Isaac is 60. He lives another 110 years after Jacob is born. So we're at 130 years at least between the two episodes we're looking at today. Okay, having said that, look at chapter 22 of Genesis. And we know the story. It came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, here am I. He said, take now thy son, thy only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee in the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I tell thee of. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, saddled his ass, took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, rose up and went to the place of which God had told him. And on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. By the way, you should see that that's kind of a pattern. Remember? The third day, the third day, the third day. Remember, it was 3 days and Laban caught up to, or Laban took off 3 days after Jacob left his place. Joseph had a new idea after 3 days. I'm going to keep Simeon. So 3 days is kind of a big deal in Genesis. Verse 4, on the third day Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off, and Abraham said to his young men, abide here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. So just in case you're already wondering, that is the same Hebrew word describing Isaac here and Benjamin, the 20 plus year old, here in chapter 43. Now, that doesn't mean he's 20, but it does mean he could have been in his 20s. Isaac could have been. And since we're not told between chapter 21 and chapter 22 how much time passes, you need to understand that Isaac could have been as old as a late teenager or early 20s when Dad is putting him down on the altar and tying him down.
Right.
Yeah. Now that is phenomenal. Because it not only speaks to the culture of the day, but it speaks to the submission of Isaac.
Yeah, right.
Which speaks greater of Christ.
Yep.
Beat you to it.
When you look at the rest of that passage in chapter 22, it's obvious that Isaac understood what was going on. He wasn't just kind of dumbfounded. What is this?
Yeah. Okay, Dad, we have the wood and we have the fire.
Right.
Where's the lamb?
Right.
Right.
He knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
So he believed. I mean, can you attribute belief to him with that as well.
There's some form of belief.
Because
Isaac heard, probably, his dad. Okay, I can't say that. There's a chance that Isaac heard his dad in verse 5 tell the young men that were with him, "We're going to go worship and we'll be back." Well, Isaac is doing the math. We're going to worship, and dad promised those men that we would both go walking down the hill. Right? So there is a level of faith here, because remember, I mean, I know it's been like 3 years since we taught this lesson. Okay, it hasn't been that long. Just feels like there's a measure of faith here, because remember, we're not just talking about, you know, sprinkling powdered sugar on something. We're dealing with burning them up into ashes on rocks. This is a burnt offering. And somehow it was going to make sense that they were going to both go walking down the hill after they worshiped. Whatever that meant. But Isaac did have a level of faith. But I want you to see just a simple word behind the word lad in the King James anyways is really something. So back to chapter 43. I want to cover one more thing before we go, which is incredibly shy of everything that we brought today. But oh well, we'll pick it up again next week. Which, by the way, is fifth Sunday, so it'll be about half as long of a lesson, and bring something to pass, and be prepared to talk. Okay, fifth Sunday fellowship. That means that we enjoy each other's company, and we look at people's faces, and we actually eat a little bit, and we'll do a devotional, and then we'll enjoy some refreshments. So, please be here for that. Verse 9. Here's what Judah said. Judah said in verse 8, "Send the lad with me, and we'll arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and thou also and our little ones. And I will sure be surety for him. Of my hand you'll require him. If I bring him not to thee and set him before thee, even let me bear the blame forever." All right. This is a big word here. Incredibly Christological. It's incredibly forecastive of Jesus Christ.
And out of the right price.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, it's really the first time Judah shines.
Right.
Yeah, because he was the one who...
Yes, you're right.
Make money off of
him. Yeah, you're right. In chapter 37, I'm assuming that maybe... How about maybe we just read back onto that chapter? Maybe Judah was trying to just keep Joseph alive. And he thought the best way to keep Joseph alive is to make my brothers profit somehow from not killing him.
On the flip side, maybe he's just hungry and he knows his family's going to die anyway, so what's he got to lose?
That's true. Yeah, I mean, one thing about it is Judah... Yes, well, he's finding the cloud on every silver lining.
Yeah,
But that is correct. What do you have to lose at this point? But he is willing to say, "Dad, I'll die if I don't bring Simeon back, if I don't bring Benjamin back, if I don't bring the whole shooting match back. I'll bear the blame for that." Verse 10, "For except we had lingered, surely now we'd return the second time." I mean, that's usually what I hear when I'm waiting to turn left and there's a new driver in the seat behind me. I could have gone four times. All right. So verse 11. "Their father Israel said to them, 'If it must be so now, do it. Take the best fruits in the land in your vessels.'" Now remember, it's not a total famine. There's still fruit. But if you eat fruit from... All right. So there's a certain limit to how much fruit and nuts you want to ingest, okay? Business will pick up for you if you overdo that, okay? All right. Moving on. "Carry down the manna present, a little balm, a little honey, spices, myrrh, nuts, and almonds, and take double money in your hand, and the money that brought again in the mouth of your sacks, carried again in your hand, peradventure it was an oversight." Maybe it was just an oversight. "Take also your brother, rise, go again unto the man. And God Almighty," now this is interesting, this is where we're going to land the plane this week, "God Almighty give you mercy before the man, that he may send away your other brother, Benjamin. If I be bereaved of my children, I am bereaved." Two things here. Number one, why do you suppose he's using the term El Shaddai, or God Almighty? This is the first time Jacob has ever spoken that name for God, at least in our biblical record. Why is he now deciding to use that name to speak of what God may do, what we hope he does?
Because of how it ends it with, if I'm bereaved, of my children, I believe.
Right. So it sounds like he is doing those inversely proportional things. He is acknowledging his lack of control and acknowledging God's great control. God Almighty and I am not. And how do we see that again? If I'm bereaved, I'm bereaved. There's this balance. Remember, we seem to think, especially if you have children who are feeling emotional at the time, it's like there's these two extremes and you have to pick one. No, you don't. You don't have to be either anxious and flippant and hurrying or fatalistic. All right, well, whatever happens. Inshallah, they say, you know, in the middle. Whatever happens. Okay, there's a lot of difference between that and try to make everything happen right now. I mean, manipulate the situation. Right? The big difference. There's a lot of room in between there. And I think Jacob is finally realizing, well, if we don't go, we starve. If we do go, we may die. Let's just see what God does. So El Shaddai is the Hebrew term there, and it's God Almighty. Any comments or questions? Sorry, I didn't get to that thing I wanted to tell you about, but we'll get to it. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's 10:29. Any other comments or questions? All right. So, let's see here. I'll send out an email this week to remind everyone about, you know, maybe bring something small to munch on next week. If you find yourself running late, like 9:20, oh, I forgot. All right. Come anyway. Okay. We want you here. And try to meet with someone tonight in that backyard barbecue. Try to gather with people. We've been talking about that for a few weeks, and it's going to be good. Hope you're enjoying, looking forward to being with some Bereans.